When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Slaughter Podcast will be discussing topics that some listeners may find disturbing.
If you're still listening, we need a new intro. Suggestions welcome. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Slaughter.
Hi everyone.
I'm Emma, and I'm going to be starting off with our first tale of true crime, and I'm going to be talking to you about a man called Ronald True. There you go.
True.
Yes, no comment necessary. So let's just dive straight in. Ronald True, he was born in Manchester on the 17th of June, 1891. His mum was 16 when she had him, and she was single. So I'm pretty impressed that she managed to keep him. I mean, this was a time when like baby farms were a thing and workhouses and stuff like that.
What year was it again?
1891. Okay. But she was able to raise him as best she can. And then their fortunes changed when Ronald was 11 and his mother married a fairly well-off man. So Ronald was now able to go to grammar school, but he was an incredibly poor student. He used to lie about everything. He would regularly just skive off and not come in.
Do you think our American listeners know what a grammar school is?
I'm just probably thinking, not. Shit. I want to make sure I get the exact definition. So,
I mean, roughly.
So, a grammar school is where you have to take an exam to get in there.
So, it's free, but it's for the clever kids, isn't it?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
But generally, the clever kids were the rich kids anyway. So, see above. So, also, his new life of wealth, he started to get things, but it didn't do him any favours in terms of his personality. So he was given a pony and rabbits and all lovely things like that, but he was cruel to all of his animals. And he ended up leaving school at 17 with no ambitions, no real prospects. So his stepdad had him sent abroad to learn some skills and some trades, such as farming and stuff. So Ronald True, he then went and lived in several countries across the British colonies and tried his hand at various things, but his reckless attitude just remained unchanged. And in addition, he soon started the wonderful hobby of taking drugs. Particularly, he got into opiates, like morphine and stuff like that. So in 1915, when he was 24, obviously this is World War One now, so he joined the Royal Flying Corps. And in February of that year, he embarked on his first ever solo flight. He crashed and suffered a severe head injury. So it's believed that this did alter him quite immediately. So his behaviour was much more erratic, and he really hated wearing hats after that.
So yeah, when you have a head injury, I don't know if I talked about this before, but because you've got that fluid in your brain that protects your brain from hitting the skull. So if you hit your head really hard, your brain will basically propel faster than the fluid can stop it. So it just goes into the bone. On the inside of your skull, you've got quite sharp bone. So then it will damage your prefrontal cortex. I guess a bit like having a lobotomy, but a less severe version. But it can, that's sort of where your personality is determined. So then it will sort of alter your character.
Interesting. So despite all of that happening to Ronald True, it was only a month after this that he was then flying again, but Of course, he wasn't ready, and straight away he crashed again. And so after this, he had a full nervous breakdown. One of the officers who was with him at the time was Pilot Officer Guy Dent. And he said about him, quote, that he was always given to rushing about and laughing with a really loud voice. And he was a very bad pilot. I think that it's mentioned quite a few times, just this loud, erratic sort of, like, he would just be laughing uncontrollably loudly at the tiniest things, or just suddenly burst out shouting and swearing. And I think in this story, he actually manages to fit in quite well into the nightlife scene at the time, because he's seen as being the life of the party, but it just never stopped. He was like that all of the time, like the loudest, most inappropriate person just at all times.
I work with some people like that who've just got a massively loud voice, and you can just hear them coming, like, anywhere in the building if they're having a conversation with someone. They're just always on shout mode.
Yeah.
It's really unnerving.
Well, most of the research from this was one of my old favourites, Murders of the Black Museum by Gordon Honeycomb. And he said that actually it was really interesting that lots of men took to Ronald True really quickly and liked him, but women never did. And I think it's just because they were a bit more wary. Like, men thought, he's the greatest guy, like, he'll just tell a bitch to fuck off right to her face and scream at her. And women like, no.
Yeah, we don't like that.
We're not a fan of this. So by October, Ronald True was discharged on medical grounds from the military completely. So he tried to get a job as a test pilot, but lost this fairly quickly because he is absolutely terrible at flying planes and they need to stop putting him in one. So then he went to New York, and he spent his time there drinking and boasting about his epic successes as a war pilot, and everybody just ate it up. He was so convincing that he got a job as a flying instructor, so that he could teach other people to be shit pilots.
Oh, God.
And he did marry an actress called Frances Roberts while he was there. So he and his wife then traveled through America. They went to a few countries in Central America, and eventually they went back to England to settle. So in February of 1919, True was at this point employed with the Gold Coast Mining Company, but his bizarre behaviour soon led to another dismissal. He was still known for being irresponsible, erratic, but he was also going against the social beliefs of the time, because he was making friends with the native Australian workers. There was loads of racism at the time. So John Thompson, who was one of the employees, said, in his words, not mine, "One must not hobnob with the blacks." And that was just seen as part of his, he's going against what's not socially acceptable. They got rid of him.
So he's sort of like a bit of a, like a maverick and a politically ahead of his time.
Yeah. He's not a racist, but he's still not a great person.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that he's not a baddie. So he returned home disgraced once again, and his stepfather made it clear that he would continue to give a small allowance so that he could keep his family, but there would be no other help whatsoever. All assistance would just be withdrawn. So Ronald True's mental state was also now in a steep decline. So he was completely addicted to morphine. He was now having quite vivid fantasies about what was going on, finding it really difficult to be distinguish between what was real and what wasn't. And he was in and out of nursing homes for about 18 months after he came back to England. And then in September of 1921, he was fined because he was convicted of using forged prescriptions so they could get more morphine. So he's really going a little bit off the rails. His wife, she stuck by him. She'd taken up acting again to keep her income. And though she tried her best to keep Ronald in good humour, their relationship did become increasingly strained. He was starting to blame all of his misfortunes. Everything that happened was because of the other Ronald True. And he believed that there was a man who was out there stealing his identity. So if a bad check was written and bounced, it was the other guy, Ronald True, who's pretending to be him. If someone was seen fighting and drunk, that's the other Ronald True trying to take him down.
So was that an excuse, or did he actually believe that?
It's thought that he genuinely believed, like, it was his way of sort of having a explaining a split in his personality, quite possibly.
Just like disassociating.
Yeah, so a couple of ideas. One, that he's dissociating from himself and saying, like, sort of, that's not the real me, that's the other Ronald. But then also, there was at this time in London a cabaret singer called Ronald True. Our Ronald True is spelt T-R-U-E. The singer Ronald True was spelt T-R-E-W. And he was very active in the London nightlife and quite possibly would have seen this other guy about. So it's thought that quite possibly he was projecting onto this second Ronald True and sort of like, because he can't distinguish between what's real and not, what's not, assuming that he's the cause of all his downfall. At trial later, they brought the other Ronald True's twin brother into court because this Ronald True was ill and just tried to show him, look, he's nothing like you.
That's weird.
So it's a little bit of both, to be honest. So he started just blaming everything on this imposter. He became increasingly paranoid, thinking that enemies, particularly the other Ronald True, were out to get him. And he also started to obsess over their toddler son. He would, throughout the day, he'd just keep wetting the boy's hair and combing it again and again, several times. And then he started to be a bit more hostile towards the son. And so his wife decided, right, we need to try and get him certified as being insane at this point. However, January of 1922, as his wife made this sort of decision, 30-year-old Ronald then abandoned his family and disappeared into London. And he just began living a life of pure excess and just hedonism and recklessness. So his life was just sex and drugs and drinking. He would either pay with a bad check and just it would bounce later, or he'd just stay in a hotel and walk out. Go eat in a restaurant, walk out, get in a taxi, run away. Like, he had nothing but was taking everything, which obviously wasn't going to last forever.
No.
So he made really close friends with this guy called James Armstrong in February, and the pair would be out and about together practically every day. And True bought a gun from Armstrong for £2 so that he was ready to protect himself should he ever get attacked by the other Ronald True. His wife was trying to track him down so that she could get him sorted. And she did manage to meet him after a couple of months. And she was completely shocked by what he was saying, his appearance. Ronald would often go on about how back when he was traveling as a young man, he met three palmists who told him that he would be killed by a woman. And so all of this stuff was sort of going around in his head and he was just becoming really, really frightening, I think is the word. So his wife contacted Scotland Yard on the 3rd of March to start helping to try and track him down before he did something dangerous. By this time, however, Ronald True was devoting almost all of his efforts and attention in pursuit of another woman who went by the name of Olive Young. So Olive's real name was Gertrude Yates, and she, I'm not sure at what point she changed it, but she did make a change in her life. She'd worked in a shop and then she gave it up so that she could take up sex work. Not the typical story of like a poor woman forced into it. Like, she definitely decided, like, this is more lucrative for me. And it was more lucrative for her. It paid her much better than working in a shop. She was able to keep a servant, a daily servant, and she was able to start buying herself nice jewels and doing okay.
That's just a lot more risky, isn't it, though? That's the problem. Have you been watching Pose?
No.
Oh, it's really good. But that shows, I mean, particularly for the transgender community, but shows that sort of the dangers of sex work, and guess that there's money to be made, but it's whether you're willing to put yourself at that risk. But yeah, it's really good.
I mean, she was putting herself in danger. I think at first it was appealing. She was going after like the higher society men, more of like an escort of with extras, like Marilyn Monroe, sort of gentleman prefer blonde scenario. But that was her thing. So she met Ronald True. And at this point, she definitely had more money than him. True had stayed over in Gertrude's basement flat. And then he'd taken £5 from her pocketbook when he left in the morning. So Gertrude no longer wanted anything to do with him. But he began to harass her. So on the 2nd of March, the day before his wife had seen him, he saw Gertrude out with another man at a tea dance. So he had hired her chauffeur-driven car with no money. He was going to pay them later, obviously, and had it take him to Gertrude's flat, but she wasn't back yet. And he did the same for 3 more nights, just asking the chauffeur to drive him to a flat, waiting for her to come home. But look, every night she wasn't there. On the 5th of March, Ronald True asked the driver again to take him to Gertrude's flat. She was there, so she let him in, and the driver was sent away. The next morning's events were outlined later as follows. So at 7:10, a boy came and delivered the Daily Mirror newspaper. At 7:30, a man came and delivered the milk. Then Ronald True made 2 cups of tea with the milk and took them into the bedroom. And then Gertrude was sat up in bed when True hit her 5 times in the head with a rolling pin. And then he strangled her.
Whoa.
He drank his tea and stayed in the flat for over an hour afterwards.
So on that, she must have said something, surely, because why would he bother making her a tea if he's about to... It's premeditated murder.
He never...
And he's a loose cannon, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could have been anything that he suddenly believed that maybe the other Ronald had got involved.
Right.
Or maybe the fact that she'd rejected him for those other nights as he saw it. He's got so much paranoia and fantasies happening. It's hard to know what it would have been that made him think she needed to die. So at 9:15... a girl called Emily Steele arrived at the flat. She was Olive / Gertrude's daily servant. And so she came in, just let herself in and started tidying up. Ronald walked into the kitchen and he'd seen Emily before when he'd stayed at the house. So they just greeted each other and like said hello. And then Ronald told her not to wake Miss Young. They were out late last night and he was going to send a car to collect her at 12 o'clock later. And he tipped her 0.5 crown and strolled on out. So Miss Steele eventually went into the bedroom to try and wake up her mistress. What she saw was that the bedroom was completely ransacked and absolutely covered in blood. So she pulled back the covers where she thought was a body, and there was the rolling pin. So then she went into the bathroom, and there she saw Gertrude's body, completely naked, a towel was shoved into her mouth, and a dressing gown tie was around her throat where he'd asphyxiated her. So she immediately ran for help, and the police were at the scene by 10:15. During this time, Ronald True, he left the flat and had taken a taxi to a menswear shop. He had blood all over him and was trying to change his clothes. So he told the shop assistant he'd just flown over from France that morning, but had a small crash landing, and that's why he had blood on his trousers. Could he help him out and he'd pay him back later?
I mean, it's weird because he's trying to cover it up, so it suggests that he does know that he's done something bad, but then he obviously wasn't in his right mind.
Yeah, I think he knows he killed her, but the reasons why are just completely...
Yeah.
Not logical, I don't think. But, I mean, that worked. So this guy gave him a new suit, charged it to his account. Oh, and
fuck, he's getting money, isn't he?
Off he went wearing whatever. So then he went in another taxi and pawned what was probably some of Gertrude's jewellery at a shop. And then he summoned the same chauffeur from the night before to take him, pick up his matey, James Armstrong, and they went to look at some engines, then they went to tea, and then finally they went to the Hammersmith Palace of Varieties at 8:40, where the driver was dismissed. So he is just living a complete playboy aristocratic lifestyle on nothing.
Yeah, I can't believe he's got away with this for so long, because you can only go to each place once.
I think it's everyone's own fault, because they just believed that if you're rich, you were a good person. And so we'll let you off. You can pay me later.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, he's so well dressed. He'll definitely give me a big tip in a week's time. Like, no, people just didn't think. They thought only poor people were the shit ones, didn't they?
Mm.
As the driver returned to the garage, the police were there waiting for him. So on his information, because obviously the maid knew exactly who it was. On his information, the officer then headed to the Hammersmith Palace of Varieties to arrest True. They went in and they took him from the box where he was watching the show, and they also took the gun from his pocket, which was loaded. So again, it's not really, True never mentioned it, but he had a loaded gun with him all the time. So why had he killed her in this other way?
Oh yeah.
He would never say. True's initial statement was that he'd been at Gertrude's flat and he saw that there was another man already there. And so after what he called a stormy scene, he left. And the other man must have been the one that killed her. Of course, the maid refuted everything. So he was charged on the 7th of March with willful murder. When he went to prison, he was an absolute knobhead. He was like... Again, he went back to being loud and giggly and erratic, and he sort of made friends with other men who were accused of murder and were like, oh yeah, another one in the murder club. Like, we kill him straight out. Like,
so he went to normal prison. He wasn't...
At first, while he was awaiting trial, this was. He right. was just boasting about it. He definitely was a bit of a rotter. He attacked other prisoners because he constantly accused people of stealing from him. He was still acting the same. So his trial was on the 1st of May, 1922, where his defence tried to say that he was insane, and the prosecution just, they didn't call any doctors, they just called witnesses to say about what he'd been up to. So he was actually found guilty and sentenced to death. And he went to Pentonville Prison after that. While he was there, they did have some doctors come and re-examine him, and they declared him insane, and he went to Broadmoor from there. And he spent his entire life in Broadmoor until he died in 1951 at age 60, a very popular patient.
No way.
There you go.
Oh, that's interesting. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In some ways, mine is weirdly similar to that.
It's a tale of broken Britain. That's why.
We're living in a tale of broken Britain.
Oh my God. Oh, we shouldn't get political on the podcast, should we?
Never.
Can we? It's our podcast.
Vote Labour!
Jeremy Corbyn's the best! Okay, that's
you like
it.
Him?
I love Jeremy Corbyn.
Luke absolutely loves him. My mum absolutely hates him, and I can't spend time
does
with
she?
Him.
Does oh, she? I God. Watched Question Time the other day, and I'm like, did but well. Did you know that he's doing this?
So, my story is Noreen O'Connor, and it's also called the Loxton Murder. And I got a lot of this information from a website.
Man Down Street.
Yeah.
From Jeremy Corbyn.
A website called loxtonsomerset.org.uk. So it's not actually a murder website of any sort, but it just had a lot of details about his murder, which was quite nice.
So it's just like a website for the place. And like the best thing we've got is this murder
this
tale.
This really detailed story of this horrible murder. So it's a similar sort of time. And there's a few sort of crossovers with yours, which is quite interesting.
Brilliant. So let's look for comparisons.
So in 1889, Miss Frederica Olwyn Marie Bulls, who's known as Marie, moved from Germany to the UK to work as a lady's maid for a woman called Emmy Maria Franziska, who's the wife of a man called Frank Tarks, who's a director of the Bank of England. So wealthy family. I guess like they were called lady's maids. Now it'd sort of be a housekeeper. So she worked for them for years and years through the First World War. Stayed there. I mean, I guess she's sort of one of the family by now, but she's working with the family as well, doing jobs for them. But when the Second World War started, due to her being German, she's basically told she can't stay in the UK. So she has to go back to Germany. So the Tarks had to find a new lady's maid.
And if Downton Abbey has taught me anything from the 20 hours that I sunk into it, is that there's nothing worse than losing your lady's maid. And also that French ones are the best.
I'm surprised you like Downton Abbey.
I love a period drama.
Isn't it just for Americans? You're like, oh my God, the UK.
Out of all of them, it's probably not the best. They just like, it's like, oh, here, we've spent three seasons making a character and getting you to know them. And then we'll just make them do something completely against their personality for the sake of drama.
Brilliant.
I find really irritating.
I'm more of a call the midwife girl.
And like the same person, like fucking Mr. Bates. How many times is Mr. Bates going to be falsely accused of a crime? Surely in someone's life, once that's going to happen. But they're all, and everyone's so quick. They're like, he must have stolen it. Even though last year you were all like, oh, we're so sorry for thinking you stole something when you didn't. And then straight away, but he did steal it. Like, it's ridiculous.
So By this point, the family live in Loxton, so they're looking for someone new, and Emmy, the wife, is in a wheelchair because she was injured in a hunting accident. So they employ a registered nurse. She's called Noreen O'Connor. She cared for Emmy, and then Emmy, the wife, dies in 1943.
Oh, dear.
And even after this, she stayed on. So although she was Emmy's sort of carer lady's maid, she stays in the house as a housekeeper, despite the fact that Marie has now come back as well from Germany. Ooh. And continued to work for Frank.
This all sounds, it's getting very Du Maurier. Like, it's going to be like Rebecca too. She's going to burn down the house.
Not quite. So Marie, I think she Marie comes back as a paid worker, and then Noreen basically is like the substitute wife. So she's the one who's going with Frank on holidays. She goes to Persia with him. She goes to South Africa with him.
Like, as his companion.
Yeah, so she's like his driver. But obviously, like, to spend that much time alone with someone, it is more of a companion role, kind of. Like, someone to have around, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's no... They don't really... I don't think they try and hide it.
It sounds like they're together and they're pretending they're not.
Yeah. She also went to, like, the cricket with him, horse
Then
races.
They're definitely together because we ain't going to watch no cricket if, if we're not getting dicket. That didn't even make any sense.
It made no sense. So she's, like, the substitute wife because his wife's died. And I guess, like, she's the younger one as well. So Noreen was pretty popular in Loxton. She was pretty sociable. She got involved in village events. She helped out at the school. I think she'd go along and make cakes and give the children presents. Obviously, I guess she's got access to Frank's money as sort of his, I guess, new wife. I mean, she's obviously not just there in a working capacity.
Yeah. So she's just stepping up to it and he's like, my wife's dead, do whatever you want.
Yeah, essentially. She helps fundraise for an extension to the village hall. So people like her. They respect her. They think, oh, she's invested in this community. So Frank dies in 1952 and he gives Noreen his house, his cars and his shares. So
they were definitely fucking.
Yeah,
100%.
So, I mean, Marie's been there for years. He fucks her off. So he, I mean, to be fair, no, he doesn't. He says in his will, Marie's got to be able to live here, though. So she inherits, I mean, it's a cottage, but it is an 8-bedroom cottage.
That sounds like the setup to a really, like a 1970s sitcom. Like, this lady's maid has inherited the house and this lady's maid is forced to live there. Hilarity ensues.
That's how I think of it. So Marie's, she's obviously been a loyal staff member. She's basically one of the family. So, and by this point, she's getting on. She's suffered two strokes. She's broken her leg in a fall. So she's, I think she's essentially bedridden. She's 77 when Frank dies, and Noreen's 46. So she's very much like the younger woman. So Noreen lets her stay in the house, and she actually gives up her time to care for her. So they seem to get on pretty well. I don't know if she had much choice, because the will did say Marie's not going to get kicked out just because I'm dead. I mean, she's 77. It would be pretty harsh to just be like,
about that. Always seems to happen in films and TV that someone says something ridiculous in their will and then everyone has to go along with it. I don't know how enforceable these things are. Just because someone's dead doesn't mean they should be able to control your life.
Yeah, that's true. Because living in her house is quite a... What if they fell out?
But then also, she's really old, like, just let her live there, it's fine.
Yeah. So all was pretty well. Noreen was, people said, affectionately caring for Marie until September the 1st, 1954. So on this day, at 7:20 in the morning, which is a Wednesday, Frank's younger son, Peter, receives a call from Noreen. She said to him, something terrible's happened to Marie and that she was under the power of evil. Marie, she means.
Oh.
And Peter's like really confused. He doesn't know what's going on, but he goes straight to Loxton. So he doesn't get there very quickly because he lives in Dorset, so it takes a bit of time, but he heads off. So before he arrives at 8:15, Eva Simmons, the cleaner, arrives, and she notices that the curtains in Marie's room were closed, which by this time was quite unusual. Noreen tells her something terrible has happened, but she doesn't elaborate. So Eva just assumes that Marie's had another stroke and she deteriorated. So she just stays out of her room. She wasn't asked to go in there. Noreen's caring for Marie herself anyway. So she just isn't, she doesn't get involved. Then Peter arrives about 10 o'clock and he finds Noreen lying on the sofa in all her clothes. So she's already got up and got herself together. And Noreen says Marie had an evil look in her eyes. So she said it had been so evil, she'd plucked her eyes out.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
That just went really... I've just been a normal woman my whole life. And then she looked at me so evilly that I plucked her eyes out.
Yeah, literally.
What, like with her fingers, just... She's the one that snapped. Oh my God.
So Marie, and she says, oh, she's not dead, but I've killed the evil.
Oh,
so
my
Peter's like, what God. The fuck? So Peter phones the doctor. I'm not sure if he
goes... she's not going to be any happier now.
So, yeah. So, I mean, Noreen's only 46, which is quite a surprising turn for someone so young. And obviously Marie was bedridden. So Peter phones the doctor, but there's no mention of whether he actually... I mean, surely the first thing he'd do is go in Marie's room and have a look. So the doctor arrives and... he's like the local doctor. He knows these
calling
people.
Like she's admitted to plucking out someone's eyeballs, and everyone's like, okay. Well, we'll see what the local doctor has to say.
Noreen says to the doctor, last night there were a lot of evil presences in the house and I was very worried. So what I did was I went up to see Marie and hold her hand so that she wasn't scared. However... after a while of sitting in Marie's room, she says, I'd seen some evil in Marie's eyes. So I had to get them out.
I mean, this might have flown in the 1750s, but this is 1950s.
Yeah.
People aren't down with the evil spirits anymore, surely.
I mean, she'd obviously had a psychotic break, I would say. So she'd also said the bedspread and the door had been giving her electric shocks. So like weird... obviously not true things, but things that she clearly believed. So when the doctor went upstairs to have a look, he found Marie lying on her back, fully dressed in bed and with a sheet over her. So he pulls up the sheet and underneath, her eyeballs were still there, but they'd been like pushed into her eye socket.
That's one of the worst things. I hate that on TV when someone pushes on the eyeballs to burst them.
I hate eye stuff anyway.
I mean, I guess that's what a sort of a little bit that goes to prove that she believed it, isn't it? Because if she wanted to kill her or hurt her, you would just kill her, or you'd like punch her in the face. But to go after the eyes like that and not kill her, she obviously thought that it
was. She was dead. But,
oh, was she?
Yeah, but I don't think. I mean, she's like a seriously ill old lady anyway. And like her eyelids were torn as well, and she'd also torn her right nostril. So he said that she'd been dead for about 7 to 10 hours, and the cause of death was injuries to the face. I mean, thankfully, it seemed like she'd been asleep or like unconscious before she'd been attacked.
Although she said she was giving her an evil look. She could see the evil in her eyes.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's actually true. So then he...
Although maybe she was having a seizure of some kind.
Yeah. So then he drives to the police station. He said he didn't phone the police because operators were still a thing at that time. So he was worried that someone would listen in and I guess be traumatized by hearing it. But so he drives to the police station and he tells the police, and then the police come and they take Noreen to the station and charge her with murder. So they have an inquest, and that's held at Axbridge Magistrates Court, and that takes about 2.5 hours. So I think it's a bit confusing in the way it's described, but I think there's an inquest and there's also a court hearing, but they sort of blurred into one. So I think at the inquest, there were 6 witnesses that were called. So there's Peter, obviously, who's Frank's son. And he was the one who turned up at 10 o'clock. And he describes what happened. And he's also asked during that if Noreen would benefit from Marie's death. So if there's anything in the will that's important.
Only that she'd be rid of her, though.
Yeah, that's it. He said no, said that she wouldn't. And then Eva, the cleaner, she testified. And she testified again in support of Noreen and said that Noreen would never have wanted Marie to be hurt. And she'd be really upset if she was aware of something bad happening to Marie. The doctor also spoke and said Noreen had always appeared helpful and competent prior to the incident, so that this was a big personality change. So a bit like in yours, where I guess it wasn't a sudden flip in your one, but she literally flipped in one night from one personality to another. At trial, the police presented evidence of there was a tooth and there was hair and a broken comb that were found in Marie's bedroom. Now, it didn't ever say how she'd attacked her eyes, but I'm not sure if maybe she had used the comb. Uh-huh. It's either the comb or her hand, grimly enough. There was also a towel with blood on that was found at the house. And then they took all the evidence, and they took scrapings from under Noreen's nails. And then they also found, when they examined Marie's body, that in one of her hands, it had been swollen and she'd been clutching hair, which suggests that maybe she was conscious.
Yeah.
And trying to fight off Noreen.
See, when I went to get my nails done, I was just chatting to the girl and I was like, oh, you know, when you take people's gels off or whatever, does anyone ever have any gross stuff underneath their nails?
Why did you ask that?
I thought that was like a... I don't know, I was interested.
That's disgusting.
Like, and she was like, what do you mean? Like poo or something? I was like, no, I just mean, I don't know. Like,
small talk can I make with this?
People always find weird stuff under their nails. Like, there's so much stuff under there.
Yeah.
Well, like
just dirt,
blood and skin cells. I don't know. Because, well, it was a bit more to the conversation, because I was saying how when I worked in a jeweler's, I was like used to weirdly find it satisfying to, if I was like fixing a watch or changing a watch strap, you'd see how on the inside of a watch, you'd get a really thick, gunky buildup, which is obviously just dead skin and sweat and oil. And
like
my job was like, I'd clean it up and make it look nice by like digging it out with a little tool.
Yes, I love shit like that.
Loved it. And so I was like, we were on that vein. And then I was like, she was cleaning out my nails, like being like, oh, is there ever anything gross under there? And she was pretty much your reaction though, like, what the fuck are you on about?
I used to like it when I'd get like, when you're younger, you have a compass, don't you, for school?
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't have a compass now. Like, needles aren't the same. I used to, like, clean the remote edges with a compass, or, like, round the little number, like, the little buttons, because you could get all, like, the gross little dirt that you can't really see. Stuff like that. Just love it. I guess it's, like, pimple popping, but, like, not as disgusting. It's, like, something really precise and cleaning.
Maybe that could be my career change. I'll be working, like, pathology and... scrape under cadavers' fingernails.
Oh, Someone's got to do it.
Someone has got to do it. And why not enjoy it?
So they also found that the tooth, well, they said it may have been removed after her death, but it was Marie's tooth that was found in the room. Noreen was being held at Weston-super-Mare and was mostly pretty quiet the first day she was held. So they brought this all into trial, so they commented on her, how she'd been acting. And that evening she began chanting religious phrases and then moving furniture around the room and praying. So they'd got a doctor to see her and she'd become very violent towards the doctor. So they had to put her in an empty cell and she began shouting and praying loudly. So again, unusual, yeah. Very erratic behaviour. And she was able to make the hearing, so she did actually go to her own, I guess, trial, but she pleaded not guilty. I don't think she gave a reason. She definitely didn't speak at court. I think they thought it wasn't appropriate. So there was another witness as well, and that was someone who'd seen her the day before. So this was like a clerk of the company she'd been given the shares in. I think she was one of, I guess, sort of a director of the company. I guess she part owned it because Frank had left her those shares.
If she's quite a large shareholder, she must have had to go to a board meeting or something, shareholders meeting.
So she was known to this company, and he said that Noreen had visited his office that day and she'd been saying Frank was guiding her, obviously he was dead, and how she'd escaped sudden death that day in a collision. And he said,
see, if that was a rom-com, everyone would be like, oh, that's amazing. The ghosts come back to guide her. Brilliant.
But he said she was mentally deranged instead. Yes. So prison staff also agree that Noreen was definitely suffering from some sort of, I guess, disease of the mind is how they phrased it. So I think mostly there wasn't a motive. I guess if she'd had something to gain from it, they might have been more likely to pursue it as an actual murder investigation. But because there was really no motive to charge her with a reason for killing Marie, she was found guilty but insane. They all agreed that she wasn't in her right mind. So she was sent to Broadmoor, but she was later released from Broadmoor to live at St Andrew's Hospital, which was local to Loxton. And then she died there in 1983. So she might have been in Broadmoor at the same time as...
Yeah. Oh, well, her mind died in 51 and they all just taken over. But I don't know. So basically, this podcast was one really long advert for the NHS.
Yeah.
Because the NHS saves lives.
Yeah, and if you care about the NHS, you know what you need to do in the next general election.
There we go.
So thanks, guys, for listening.
Thank you.
I know it's a bit of a short one this time, but I'm sure you can live with that. Please follow us on Twitter if you like to, at Slaughter the Pod. We're on Facebook, if you just type in @laughter.
We're on Instagram, Lucy Emma Slaughter.
You can email us at slaughterthepodcast@gmail.com. Tell a friend, write us a review. Tell us what you thought of UK Drag Race.
Send us a Christmas card.
Don't, because they'll have to know our address.
Weird. Register to vote.
Take care, guys. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.